Thursday, October 24th, I was up early, about 7:30, and had breakfast with Lyndon, worked on my speech for the day's luncheon, went to Mr. Pear's shop with my constant companion, my straw bag, full of letters to sign, and the luncheon program of the American Association of Nurserymen, especially the pictures of today's award winners, banks and insurance companies, that you would expect, but a truck drive-in cafe and two filling stations, that's something of a triumph. An interest in better business surroundings is spreading. I like to immerse myself in the subject matter of a meeting before I go to it. The aims of the organization, the award winners, if any, the guest list, the head table, scenario, as we call it. And so, close to 12:30, with Marcia, Lizzie still sick, I drove to the Statler Hilton and was soon in the midst of a congenial group that I've worked with much of these last 4 years. Of course, the hosts of the organization, Mr. Shadow and Mr. Letterer, and then City Councilman John Heckinger and his wife, June, Mary Lasker, Dr. Grosvenor, Councilwoman Polly Shackleton, and Stu Udall. Walter Washington was going to join us later, his third luncheon for the day. And in the familiar line formation, we walked into the ballroom of the Statler Hilton, fixed more beautifully than I ever remember it. Banks of greenery, mounds of red roses, actual trees about 12 feet tall, flanking the head table. It was really quite stunning. They'd ask Bill Baxter to give the invocation. I haven't seen him in ages, and he's grown a mustache. He is the day's minister, all right. No longer at St. Mark's, not even at the Peace Corps, but somewhere in the government, in the poverty program. I had the pleasure of being early on the program, which always makes it possible for me to really enjoy the rest of it. A brief speech congratulating all the award winners, and then a hope expressed that the most progressive businessmen and imaginative planners would turn their eyes toward two of the big blots on today's landscape, shopping centers and the urban fringe. And then came the big event, the handing out of the awards, some 16, each amply recorded by photographers and spread all across the United States, from Massachusetts to Oklahoma City to California. No surprise that it's heavily loaded with Californians. The best news of the day to me was from Mr. Letterer that they had three times as many entrants this year as they had had a few years ago. And then, just when I thought it was over and was gathering up my gloves and purse to rise and depart, Mr. Letterer rose for what turned out to be sort of a major speech of the day, a tribute to me. Glowing, sweet, dear. But it makes me feel rather like I'm present at my own funeral, and I'm not a bit ready to cooperate. I like the sentiment, but I don't want the show, unless it fuels some further activity. It was over by 2:30. And I returned to the White House, and at 3 began a meeting in the West Hall with Dorothy and Dr. Grover and Dr. Rhodes on the library. More and more these days, the library is devouring my hours. It has more strands than the hair on my head, more things to pursue. I'll be so glad when Dr. Newland is with us full time. The burden of today's meeting was to try to catch up on some knowledge of just who in the administration, from the cabinet to the Congress, ambassadors, the whole range of people, had accepted the invitation of the archivist to leave their papers to the Johnson Library. We went over all the lists, beginning with the cabinet. I was gratified by many, disappointed by some, especially pleased by Clark Clifford's prompt and clear-cut decision to give his papers that related to the period of the Johnson administration. Half a dozen or so we marked for me to call. Former Secretary Luther Hodges of Commerce and HEW Secretary Anthony Celebrezze. The meeting lasted nearly 3 hours and was not over until close to 6. I noticed Linda wandering through the room as though she had something to say to me. Warren Lynn was with her. And as soon as my group left, I turned to Linda and said, "Honey, what time is it?" She looked at something in her hand and gave me an answer, oddly, that was in seconds. And suddenly I realized that the thing she had in her hand was a stopwatch and that she must be counting pains. I was flooded with guilt that I should have had my mind anywhere else. I said, "Honey, have you called the doctor?" "Yes, he would be here pretty soon." I talked to Mike Howard. He would have the car standing by. He'd probably go in two of them. Linda has had a suitcase packed for days. Lucy was everywhere at once, the most in charge of anybody, just scintillating with excitement. Dr. Lonergan came a little past six, a calming influence and a bit of humor. He's been just right for Linda, a competent, professional, detached physician. And yet to him, Linda has become an individual, not just a case. And they are good friends now. No trouble at all that she's the daughter of the president. I think Yuma has helped on both sides. He examined her in my room on that beautiful canopied bed. Said he thought they'd better wait a little while, but he felt sure it would be within the next few hours. I took Lynn over to Lyndon's office, hoping to see him privately for just a moment to explain to him that we would be going to the hospital, and for him to be very quiet about it until we got out there and told Liz. A quiet moment with him is hard to come by. And I gave him the message in sort of shorthand talk with his next appointment, Carl Finney, coming in the door. And then back over to the West Hall. Business had picked up. There was an hour of departure pretty soon. Yes, the doctor said, he thought the time had come to go. I called Lyndon and told him we were leaving right away. And he said, wait just a minute. And truly, in just a moment, he was there. And Linda, who was in considerable pain by this time, drew herself up, proud and tall and very composed. He kissed her and told her how proud he was of her and spoke of the day when she was born. And then we were off in a flurry of excitement in two small cars, no limousine, the doctor and Linda in the first one, Lucy and I in the next one. And an odd thing was that at the last moment, little Lynn seemed to know that something was happening that affected him, and he didn't like it very much. We left him in Helen's keeping, for Lynn would come over later and spend the night with him. Oddly, he sensed, I think, that we were not looking at him or thinking about him, but about Linda and something else. Always when I ride the George Washington Memorial Parkway, it is with pleasure, exulting in the heavily wooded hills and the river below, and the city that stretches along the Potomac, the capital like a great white pearl in the middle. Tonight, I didn't give a darn about it all. It seemed to last forever, and the speedometer crept up above 50 to 60 and I think 70, and I could see Linda in the next car, running her hand through her hair, it looked like, and leaning over toward the doctor, and the moment stretched endlessly. Actually, it wasn't quite 8:15, I think, when we went up in the elevator to the presidential suite, and it looked so good. A nurse came in and took Linda, and the doctor disappeared, and I tried to put in a call to Chuck, received an answering one from Lyndon, who said we could get him the message through General Walt, who was going out tomorrow, and was right then in the process of making arrangements for his trip, and would add this message to Chuck onto his telephone call. And I took out the added insurance of sending a cable to Chuck that she had gone to the hospital more later. And then I called Mr. or Mrs. Robb, got Mr. Robb. He was delighted, and he said that Mrs. Robb had just called him that she was going to stay out at a campaign meeting with Mrs. Bruce Solomonson, and he could get his supper out of the icebox. And then, before I could call Liz, she called me. Yes, I confirmed at 8:33. Indeed, we were in the hospital, and we had just gotten word to Chuck, or tried to. Dr. Lonergan came back in, and here was another moment of humor. He was dressed in strawberry pink pants and jacket, and in came the anesthetist in a sort of a lime green pants and jacket. The nurses, of course, in white. The doctors saw my face and laughed and said, we wear them this way so they won't get lost in the laundry. A psychedelic note to this whole exciting evening. Lucy, jumping up and down with excitement, practically knocked my coffee cup out of my hand when she threw her arms around me. She engaged the doctors in conversation using professional terms whenever they weren't busy. And she told Linda about every 2 minutes how proud she was of her. And indeed, so was I, because Linda was cooperating with the doctors, strength and composure and will. Later, when I did a tape to Chuck, I told him that he would have been proud of her. She would make a pretty good officer herself. Every now and then, Dr. Lonergan assured me that everything was going fine. Lyndon called a little past 11. Actually, things moved much faster than any of us had expected. It was close to a quarter of 12. when the doctors put Linda on the cart and rolled her up to the delivery room, I called Lyndon immediately. He said he would come on out. Fizz hoped very much that he would be the one to come down and see the press and make the announcement and hand out the cigars. And our prearranged plan between Dr. Lonigan and me was that he would send his assistant, Dr. Nabb, out of the delivery room as soon as the birth had taken place, leaving everyone locked in there. His assistant would tell me the facts of the birth. Linda had been fiercely anxious that I get word to Chuck before I did to the press, at least make every effort to, and also, of course, to Chuck's parents and to Lyndon. She clutches her privacy proudly, if not always effectively. And so I was startled just a few minutes past 12 in my room across the hall from Linda's to hear the phone ring once, snatch it up, and there was Mike Howard's voice, saying, "Miss Johnson, it's a little girl, and Linda's fine. That's all." And he hung up, almost in a state of shock. I put in a call to General Walt, apologized for calling him so late, told him the news, a little girl, they're both well, more details later, please get it to Chuck as soon as he could, and then asked Lucy to call the Robs, and then was uncertain whether to call Lyndon, because I don't know how secure those car telephones are, and by this time he was en route. And still, the doctor himself hadn't come down, but it all came together at once. The doctor came in and confirmed what Mike had told me. A little girl, born very quickly and uneventfully. Actually, she'd been in the delivery room only about 15 minutes. And then Lyndon himself walked in, having by mistake gone past the whole phalanx of the press on the way up, apparently. We told him the news, and together the three of us, Lyndon and Lucy and I, went down to meet the assembled press, led by a beaming Marcia, and there was Liz, really her first appearance since her operation. There seemed to be some 30 or so people, Helen and Francis and Walhilla and Dorothy McCardle. Lots of cameras. Lyndon started passing out cigars. I don't know whether absent-mindedly or with a sense of humor, to Helen and Francis. We were following along behind with a box of candy for the ladies. He went to the microphone and announced in a few happy words that Linda had had a little girl at 12:03, that she's apparently healthy, vociferous, and seems to know that she's here and has her work cut out for her, since she's already expressing herself. It was the only totally pleasant press conference I ever remember, and everybody was content with the news. It seemed to me that while Hilla LaHaye beamed the most, somehow the whole night seems to melt into a montage for me, and the pictures I remember best are Linda gathering herself together with pride and strength to say goodbye to her daddy as she left for the hospital. And then, once again, as she was wheeled in from the delivery room on that hospital cot covered with a sheet, she managed to smile for him and said, "You and Mother wanted a girl, didn't you?" As for baby Rob, she was very pink with lots of black hair, very vocal and active. She flailed her little fist and turned her little head from side to side. Her fingers are extremely long and delicate. I see no likeness to anybody, just a new little person in this world. Lyndon and I went hand in hand down the hall back toward the presidential suite, and he stayed a few minutes longer, saying goodnight to Linda, looking through the glass at the baby. Bob Knudsen had already taken a picture of her. And then he left for home about 1 o'clock. Lucy and I stayed in the room with Linda a little while longer, and then I went to bed in the room across the hall, but Lucy did not come to join me until nearly 2. One of the dividends of these past few weeks is an increased closeness between those two girls, Linda and Lucy, and scarcely even Linda herself seemed to be more elated, more grateful, more in tune with tonight's happenings. And so baby Rob turns out, after all, to be Friday's child, who is loving and giving.